Welcome to the OnFit Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the OnFit Podcast. I'm Emma McGarvey, Program Manager of the Sustainable Policy Institute, and today we will be discussing gender diversity at the Eurosystem and investment perspective. I am joined today by Helena Agias, Head of Markets and Reserve Management at Banco de Portugal, who contributed to our Gender Balance Index report on this very topic, and Adriana Perelli, who is Regional Executive Southern of Southern Europe, Managing Director of Global Client Management for BNY Mellon. So thank you both and welcome. There is a significant amount of evidence that increasing women's access to finance and including women in the leadership of financial institutions has a positive outcome on financial stability. So what role should central banks be playing in driving gender inclusion and access to finance for women? And Helena, I'll direct this question to you.
In fact, there are a lot of things that central banks can do, and they are already doing. Many central banks are already doing a lot to drive gender inclusion and access to finance for women. One obvious thing that comes to my mind is financial literacy programs, for example. Many central banks invest a lot in financial literacy programs in order to help people to have better awareness of risks. And of course, those programs are not specifically directed towards women. But if we have in mind that, especially for older generations, there is a wider gap between men and women in what concerns financial literacy, these programs help drive gender inclusion and access for finance for women. So they are very important, even if they are not directly meant for women. Also measures like scholarships, prizes that some central banks promote are very important for, in this case, for younger generations. One example comes to my mind is the ECB's Women in Economics Scholarship that supports the enrollment of female candidates in a master's degree. So there is a lot that central banks are already doing and can even do more. But I think that more than that, what central banks can and should do is lead by example. Give their own example to their stakeholders. And so central banks should show that they are, making efforts towards more parity in their own organization. One way to get that is to set targets. And I will go again to an example concerning the ECB. Because last week we heard Christine Lagarde announcing in a conference that the ECB has set itself ambitious gender targets and will have those targets in mind when implementing recruitment or career advancement policies like mentoring schemes and leadership training. So these are some examples of what central banks can do to in my opinion, to promote gender inclusion and access to finance for women.
Great. Thank you so much, Helena. So, Adriana, just in terms of kind of the impact that this can have on the wider financial sector, what kind of impact can, central banks leading by example, setting up these schemes have on the wider financial sector?
It's a very interesting question because I think since a while now there is evidence, if not a causation, certainly a correlation between the diversity that companies have and the results that they are able to obtain. There is a McKinsey study that has been repeated now a number of times that indicates that, and I'm just kind of quoting, the companies, the top quartile, this was over 12,000 companies, the last one was conducted in 2020. Companies, the top quartile, 25% more likely to experience above average profitability than in the fourth quartile. This has actually increased over time, which I find actually interesting in its own right. So it was 15% in 2014, and it was 21% in 2017. What is even more interesting is that even in the top quartile, there are differences between the best and the, you know, not as diverse companies. So those companies have more than 30% women in top positions are actually operating with a 48% increase in profitability or likelihood to obtain certain type of financial results than the companies that are below them. Now, that is huge. From a business perspective, obtaining those results is huge. So that's why I'm saying, even though there is no causation, it's clear that the best companies are those that have more diversity at all levels, not only at the board, but at all levels of the companies. And that is key. So I think that leading by example, as the central banks can do and can provide guidance to the whole sector across multiple markets on what good looks like, is extremely powerful in terms of providing a setting of what, you know, needs to happen. And I think one of the things Elena said, which was related to setting targets, is absolutely key in this regard. So more to come, but definitely it's a business imperative. It's not a nice to have.
Brilliant. And why do you think that kind of having women in these top leadership positions actually leads to increased profitability? And what kind of impact can having stronger gender diversity drive, or how can bringing in stronger gender diversity drive better returns for investors? Adriana, do you have any perspective on that?
Sure. And I think it's not only gender diversity necessarily, it is diversity for sure. And it is diversity in all ways that you can possibly imagine. Of course, it's also diversity of culture, diversity of background, racial diversity. I mean, there are multiple areas to be thinking of. But of course, the first one, the larger, most visible one in society is gender. So if we don't start from there, where else should we be able to start? And, you know, in a way, it was seen at the beginning more from a risk point of view. The fact of having different point of view was allowing to spot issues or areas of concern in a much better way than if you had people that were coming all from the same gender, from the same schools, from the same background, where everyone was going to go in the same direction, even if the direction was the wrong one to go to, right? And I think, you know, this has been very visible throughout the crisis, certainly in 2008, but also beforehand, that was one of the reasons for issues to occur. I think now we've gotten to a different perspective, which is more evolved, that is by having different perspectives at the table, you get to better decisions, not only risk, but, you know, across every element of a decision-making process, better ideas, more ideas on the table. And so it provides more opportunities for companies to evolve and evolve in a direction that is the best possible one for the results that that company wants to achieve.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think you kind of touched upon this a little bit already, but I guess also, Helena, it would be great to get your perspective on this too. Why do you think having women in leadership positions does drive better decision making? What kind of element of you know, having women in those positions helps develop that?
Well, I absolutely agree with what Adriana has just said. And I would focus very much on the diversity aspect, because diversity is like, it's like portfolio diversification. We all know in finance that we improve the quality of our portfolio by having a wider range of assets. And it's not because this asset is going to, we know in advance it's going to perform better than the other. The more assets that we have in one portfolio, the best results that we expect to get in terms of even in terms of risk return. So in decision making, I think that this diversification law also applies. And in fact, several studies and research show that you gain by having a diverse set of decision makers. And that is key to better financial results, as Adriana said. And this applies, like Adriana said, not only to gender diversity, but all kinds of diversity, ethnical, cultural, etc. Because you take better decisions if you are taken out of your comfort zone, out of your beliefs, what you take for granted, and you are forced to think out of the box. And so to have a diverse board or a diverse decision-making body is much better than have decision makers that are all similar to each other. And so this is not because women make better decisions in itself, but because they bring a new and different perspective. And unanimity is comfortable, but it's not good. And so that applies to portfolio management, but also to management in general. But another reason is for better decision making is the fact that many women, not necessarily all women, but many women have a different management style than the most men. This is not a rule in itself. There are exceptions, of course, and outliers, but many women tend to have a management style more in line with what is needed to raise a family, to deal with teenage children, to negotiate and get things done with very little formal power. That's what women have been doing for centuries or even millennia. So, and this requires skills that most women have been developing for centuries for necessity. And those soft skills, as we call them now, before they didn't have even had a name, these skills that women traditionally had, but these skills like empathy, negotiation skills, the capacity to build bridges, these skills have been underrated until recently when management theory found out how effective they really were. And so this is an advantage that some women have these days because they already have what is needed to have a better decision-making style. So in a nutshell, having women in leadership positions brings in one side brings diversity because women are different, but also it's good because some of them have developed skills more in line with what is considered a better management style.
Yeah, and if I could add, Emma, I think the companies have changed as well, right? So today's environment from a management style, because I think I'm completely in agreement with Elena, just the style is different. Again, not everyone, not in the totality, but the companies are now working in a more agile fashion. The market environment is changing in a very fast pace. And you need to have around you groups of people with very different points of view, very different perspectives, but also different areas of expertise. And you need to create a team that's really just kind of going to look at various items in a fast fashion, fast pace to deliver on a result. Those type of agile approaches require an inclusive style of leadership. And I love the idea of women have been exposed, again, by necessity to, you know, kids who change very, very fast in their lives. Teenagers who start kind of looking at you when you come into the door and there is a discussion. You don't even know why the discussion is occurring. But you know the discussion is occurring. You need to figure out how. This is something that women have been exposed to and can take back into the work environment as well. So it's actually an interesting perspective, but I can see why also in today's environment more than potentially what was there 100 years ago, this is actually more necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I guess considering the clear benefits and skills that women have kind of, you know, in these leadership positions and the management styles that can be brought, how can we close this gap to ensure that, you know, more women do take these leadership positions? And Adriana, I'll go to you first, but I'm sure Helena, you will also have some perspective on this as well.
What we've seen certainly in our company, right, at DNY Mellon, is there is a need to work from the top. And at CEO level and at executive committee level, just to be very clear of what is the opportunity, what is the need, what is the business agenda, and be very clear about the why. So we're not doing this because it's nice. We're not doing this because it's the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do, but that's not the reason why we're doing it. We're doing it because it's a business rationale. And if that is very strong at the top, then you can work with the affinity groups, which are the bottom-up aspect, to help the conversation, what we call courageous conversation as well, just to be very direct about items that are becoming more and more difficult at times, right? And so it's not an HR matter per se. HR is going to implement a policy that allows us to get to where we need to be. But certainly setting targets, I mean, you know, is critical. And the 30% club that has been established, we were part of it initially, was definitely helpful in getting the idea out there that CEOs were committing to a target. And it was a self-imposed target, but with date, and of course also providing this metric to the first line and the lines below, just kind of saying, this is a target, that's a common target, we need to get there. And I think that's critical in order to affect the change that is needed. You need to have measurable targets and with clear ideas about what is the business agenda that's providing you with those, or that requiring those targets to be adhered to. And that really just, you know, then follow and just make sure that you are continuing on a path to deliver. And other items are more the how do you achieve rather than, you know, the what. So to me, the changes happen from the top and from bottom up. And it really is that aspect of working in a certain period of time to get to those results that's making the difference. And that's what we've certainly seen, and the improvements that we've had have come from that type of approach.
Could you elaborate a little bit actually on kind of what you think the target should be? And also you mentioned the 30% club. Could you elaborate a little bit on what that is and what's that involved?
Of course. So the 30% club was created starting in the UK by a number of people and companies that were agreeing that in principle, in order to affect the change, it was required to have more gender balance. What was needed is setting a target. There was a self-imposed target, not a quota, not coming from the state. While in certain countries, of course, we do have quotas, at least at board level. But the idea was not only a board issue, it was board, but also, you know, filtering to various levels of the companies, which in my view is critical. It's not enough to have a number of women at the board. And a number of CEOs agreed and approved of this and set themselves, you know, some targets. And in fact, the person who launched it initially was kind of saying, you know, I wish I would have actually said 50%, you know, club as opposed to 30% club, because we could have been more ambitious in the objectives that we were setting for ourselves, which I found fascinating as a concept, the fact that she was just kind of forthcoming saying we should have done 50% club. It's like, okay, fine, that's actually an interesting perspective, interesting point of view. But it has been extremely successful. Driving in multiple countries. It started in the UK, was then extended to a number of other countries. And I would say a very large number, I don't know the exact number of the companies currently part of the 30% club, but it's extensive in most countries. So that has been a nice, an interesting way and approach. And by setting targets, then, you know, it started becoming how do we measure those targets and at what level? So you really start also building a knowledge about where women are actually either exiting the workforce, which is, you know, happening. And unfortunately, we can probably discuss this further later on. COVID is not going to be helpful in any shape or form in this regard. It's certainly an area of concern. But, you know, for example, young women who are coming into a company represent normally around 50%, depending on the type of industry, it's around 50%. 20% less women than men get to the first level of promotion. It starts from there. If you don't have, if you only have, you know, of the same kind of starting from the same area, more men who are getting to the first promotion than women, you're already starting very early in life, not being able to get up the ladder of the organization. So there is an issue related to how do you hire? How do you get people just to kind of be given opportunities and stretch opportunities to actually be visible? how you, do you communicate to me, women, in a different manner about the opportunities that exist? Men tend to be better at raising their hands and saying, yes, I can do this. Women are a little shyer to do that if they don't have all, 100% of the requisite for a position. They will not be forthcoming and just kind of say, you know, I could take that role. And this is very visible in companies. If you don't have enough women in leadership position, it's going to be difficult for women to think that they can do it all, have a family and do their job in, you know, in a meaningful manner and just kind of getting up the ranks of a company. And at the same time, so you need that sponsorship, you need that kind of visibility aspect, and you need also women senior leaders who are actually saying, you can do it. It's possible. I've done it. So to me, those are the other areas that are softer but extremely important. But if you don't measure at all levels in the way, right, you will not be able to know what is going wrong in your company. Are you promoting enough? Are you promoting junior enough? Are you hiring the right people? Do you have the right people in front of you when you're just hired for a senior position? Do you always have a woman, you know, in the ranks of people you are interviewing or not? And there are multiple other areas to look at, but if you don't start from measuring, it's very difficult to understand what you can do better.
Yeah, absolutely. Hannah, do you have any thoughts on this? Anything that you would like to add?
Sure you do. Yes, I certainly do. I certainly do, because I absolutely agree with what Adriana was saying. And I think that one reason why sometimes that it's difficult to go up that ladder is because in the middle of that ladder, you get those intermediate management positions where women are in the middle of their lives. That's where they are having children. And so it's the most difficult time in their lives to get things done, to conciliate their responsibilities, their family responsibilities and their careers. And so I would say that it's easier at the beginning, and then it gets also easier at the end. I can speak for myself. Now I have my children are grown up, and I don't have any difficulty in meeting different goals in terms of taking care of them and so on. When I was younger, in my 30s, let's say, it was much, much more difficult. And if companies don't understand that there is a period in the middle of their women, female staff lives, that where it's more difficult, but it's temporary, then the opportunity is lost. Because if you don't go to those medium management positions in the middle of your career, then you lose the train and you are not able to proceed and to catch up later on. So companies need to be aware of that.
It just reminds me, I had a couple of colleagues where this was so visible, right? One with difficult pregnancy, and, you know, I actually had to tell her, please go home. Use your computer at home. I can't have a situation where you can lose your child here because you're just kind of concerned, or you feel this is the right thing to do for the company. For the company, what you are going to do is go back home and just work from your sofa if you really want to open the computer, otherwise you don't. You know, but the fact of the matter is, people who have had, you know, this part of their life, you know, have pregnancy, have a child, the first year is very kind of interesting and tough year, not sleeping, all the things that, you know, are normal. But the type of skills these colleagues come back with are huge. So it's not as if it is the same person from before and after. It's actually a person with more skills when they come back. And this should be recognized, and not always this is kind of visible to the company. So I think it is not only temporary, but it's temporary with a benefit for the company if you allow for that benefit to materialize.
Yeah, this kind of does tie into my question, which was, how
how do you think companies can be better at supporting this? So obviously, as you kind of highlighted, women reach a certain level and then the babies come and it's obviously then hinders and slows things down. How can companies be better at kind of supporting women through that? And I guess, Adriana, a question more directed to you is kind of what investment can be done to help this and again, to help women reach these kind of leadership positions.
Yeah, I guess part of this is culture, meaning you need to support them. It's not a financial, I mean, aside of the fact that people need to have the flexibility of being able to stay at home for a certain period of time and come back when they're ready. And that readiness is not the same for every woman. It depends. But that aspect of flexibility of saying, you know, don't worry. You know, it's your time. And also when you come back, don't believe that you need to come back full on, right? There is a ramp up period of time. And of course, if you need a few hours to be back initially, aside of what the regulations say, because of course, regulations in different countries say different things, but that level of flexibility applied intelligently makes a difference between a person coming back or not coming back. And I've seen a number of colleagues who were really on the verge of not coming back, and it was just enough to give them the support that they were, you know, they felt comfortable enough to take their time and then come back, and they were delighted by the fact of being able to consolidate with things. The other part, which is also policy making, is not only something that companies can do. It's, you know, it's nice that we have maternity leaves. We should have paternity leaves. And by the way, fathers should take those paternity leaves, because in countries where, I mean, I'm based in Milano, family is based in Milano, in Italy, you have very short period of time that's allowed to, for fathers to take paternity leave. They don't. So there is also this element of culture opportunity, for families to be families. This is not, I mean, children are children with a father and a mother. Both are key and instrumental, particularly in today's environment, to be able to support their kids. It shouldn't be only the mothers, right? So to me, that is another cultural aspect. Companies can do so much there, but certainly paternity leave, you know, to me is an important element. And I remember when I joined, when I initially started working, I worked for a Danish bank, and my, you know, colleague at the time, actually my boss at the time, with his wife, they adopted a baby, and they took exactly the same amount of time off, 3 months and 3 months, to stay with the child, you know, and just kind of cooperate in this new family they created. It was beautiful. To me, it was completely unheard of, because I had never seen it. I had never experienced it. When you start experiencing and seeing it's possible, then I think it's also going to be an enormous change for, you know, companies and for, you know, society as a whole. At the end of the day, it is finding a way to invest what is necessary from a company's perspective, but also supporting the policies that are necessary in order to be able to create that framework that will allow to have much better women representation in companies.
So yeah, this obviously does lead on well to the next question, which is looking at kind of what the Bank of Portugal has been doing in this space. And obviously the Bank of Portugal has been very successful in driving gender equality. And with the share of women in top and middle management roles in 2018 being at 30% and 51% respectively, obviously that's a really big achievement. So could you talk me through the initiatives, the policies and the recruitment strategies which has enabled this?
Well, I can start by the recruitment strategy, which is very, very simple. There's no strategy. It's just recruiting the best candidates, because it's not recent. For the last decades already, this has not been a problem of recruitment. In Portugal, there are more skilled women coming out of the universities year after year, more women than men. Even more women going, being accepted to the best universities than men. So it's not the women that come out of university are in larger quantities than men, so it's not a problem of recruitment. Then there is, as we know, and Bank of Portugal is no different from any other companies, and Adriana already touched upon that, there is a problem, like a demographic question and a problem of glass ceiling. They come in, but then they don't progress as fast as men to management roles. But even that is changing if we look how it was some years ago and how it is now. But it's like a pyramid. Lots of women coming in, young women, but then fewer and fewer going up. But it's also a question of like I said, demographic question, because the women who are now in middle management roles, they were recruited many years ago, and those who are on top roles were recruited even more years ago. So it's like a pyramid, but that has also to do with time, the passage of time, and things are moving and changing very fast. The Bank of Portugal has many policies supporting raising a family, and for instance, Adriana was talking about that, paternity leaves. Many men, more and more men, take paternity leaves. It's no longer something that people are ashamed of, or that people make fun of, like at the beginning. Many years ago, I remember people making fun of those few colleagues, male colleagues, that chose to take paternity leaves. That's very normal these days at the Bank of Portugal. And there is strictly equal treatment in terms of career progression. And there was even a mentoring program, not exclusively directed to women, but that helped many young and promising women gain confidence and take the right steps to progress in their careers. Because sometimes it's a question of culture and a question of self-confidence. And there are many obstacles, but the obstacles are not at the bank, but in their families or in the family environment or in the cultural legacy that many women still have. And sometimes we are not even aware of that legacy, but we all suffer from that still. So the main obstacles are not at the office, but at home, I think. And so help is needed to make more women self-confident and able to organize the multiple tasks that they have. But I'm very optimistic. It's a question of time and demography. 30 years ago, we had many clever young women at the bank, but not yet in management positions, except for some very exceptional cases. 20 years ago, we started having several women in middle management, but not in top management role. 10 years ago, there were already many women heads of departments, but not at the board. More recently, a minority of women reached the board. So there is a process being made, and so it's a pipeline. It's a term that I borrow from Christine Lagarde in last week's conference. It's a pipeline.
I think just kind of going back a little bit to some of the points that Adriana also made too, and kind of talking about paternity leave. In our latest gender balance index report, Helena, which you contributed to, you touched upon cultural legacy as a burden and, you know, something which still impacts women in terms of work-life balance and hindering progression. This is a question for both of you, but Helena, I'll go to you first. Sort of how do you think this can be overcome?
As I was saying, the employer may have the best practices, but if the family and the social surrounding is not supportive, the career of a woman will always be more difficult than that of a man. Because there tends to still be an even burden of share of family tasks, because we women tend to feel more responsible for those tasks, and we feel more guilty if we don't devote enough time and effort, and especially if we are perfectionists and like to do everything well, we feel guilty if we feel we are not doing something well at home in order to do it well at the office. So it's really difficult, and we all suffer that. We all know what we are talking about. And that was, as I already said, when women have small children, many voluntarily choose part-time jobs or jobs in companies or industries that have offered more flexibility but have less progression opportunities or paid worse. So, but women, even very high potential women, they voluntarily choose, take those options. So they choose to be less ambitious. And that's a pity, but we all know lots of cases like that. And that is visible, especially in those couples, when we all know many cases like that, of couples where the male has a good job and earns well. In that case, the female tends to feel guilty of being too ambitious and fearful of not being a good mother if she insists in being too devoted to her career. And because sometimes we think that the problem is in the company or in men, that men don't help. But sometimes the problem is inside ourselves, inside our heads, and in the way we have been conditioned. We all know of cases where women have tend to be more critic of other successful women more than men. Sometimes when one woman is very successful, the sharper criticism comes precisely from the other women. And that's very strange, but thinking about that, maybe one hypothesis is that that has to do with the fact that we tend to regard, or tended in the past, to regard each other as competitors. We were competing with each other for the attention of male. And this is very, very old. It's something very old that comes from a long time ago, but we have to get rid of that. Because otherwise, how can we explain that more than half of the population, of the world population, living longer than men, having the power to influence the children? How come that we didn't have, for all these centuries, we didn't have, we were destitute of power? I think in part it was our own fault. So, how can we overcome this? By changing our heads, stopping regarding each other as competitors, being more solidary with each other. And more importantly, I think we have to educate our children, boys and girls, both boys and girls, differently than we did in the past. We have to get rid of the stereotypes, but because it's extremely difficult. Because still today, and I was talking with my daughter last week, and she was telling me some colleagues of her still regard success for women as meaning that a woman to be successful is to get married with a successful and this is crazy, but still exists in many cases. It's crazy. We have to get rid of these stereotypes and these way of thinking, because being successful is taking the future in our hands, not getting a successful husband. And we have to get rid of this preconceived idea. And so we as women have to take our destiny in our hands and to educate our children in a different way. And to, instead of perpetuating these beliefs from mother to son and to daughter. It's a long way to go, but I think that I'm really optimistic. It's a question of time. Things are changing, but it will take maybe one or two generations.
Adriana, do you have any points of view with this?
Yeah, I guess just to complement a little bit what Elena was kind of saying, I think there are aspects from it. You know, office environment from a company's perspective that are key. One is role models, as we were saying before. Having enough women in senior positions that can be seen and share their perspective and their views, but also help younger women to find their way, which doesn't mean, you know, doing their job for them, but showing what are, for example, opportunities that exist for them. And let me make an example. Lots of women, particularly in the past, were going and still are in areas like, you know, they don't have a P&L, not the CFO area, not profit and loss areas, but other support functions. of course, it's difficult to have a long career or widen your career if you're going into one of those areas. So having someone who tells you you should steer towards, you know, this area versus this other is extremely helpful. This would have not happened in the past because there weren't enough women in senior position to actually show that it is possible to actually operate in different aspects. I think also there was, you know, one of the studies related to the only, I think it was McKinsey that called it, but it's a nice, you know, word. If you have a team where there's only one woman, that woman will necessarily operate more in a way that is similar to the rest of the team. And so will morph, will change, will not bring herself into that team. Now, we actually want diversity. So the whole concept about diversity is also inclusion, right? And the inclusion comes from, you know, being part. You bring your diversity to the table, but for the others to actually take on the fact that there is a diversity that matters and that is most important. And that you can do it only if you have enough representation of diverse people in a team, in a group, at senior levels, in a board. So I think that is also another aspect that is critical. Sponsorship and allies matter, right? And that's true. I think that it's always more difficult when you're going to more senior levels, simply because while it's very easy to measure output when you're young in first kind of roles you have in a company, it's more difficult to measure output when you're in a more senior position. Soft skills, how you're visible, how you operate, what is your leadership style and who's defining a leadership style becomes critical. So again, more women who can actually have a different perspective on what leadership is and show a different leadership that works, that's providing results, but is different, is critical. Because if the leadership is seen as, you know, the commander in chief that goes into the army, is very different than someone who's just kind of collating a team to work collaboratively for a common output. So I think those are the items that you can do really in a company to change the culture, and is show and demonstrate the certain things work. Have more women go up the ranks, particularly in certain areas of the companies where they can provide valuable output that is key. Support women to raise from the task at hand. Women tend to be very, very good at operating in the maximum of their capability to finish a job. But if you're telling them, hey, come to this event because there are lots of people to meet there, you can get visibility, you can know other people that are important to you, they will shy away if they haven't finished 100% of what they have on the table, which with it, it's not possible because every one of us has more than what you can normally do in a day. So the reality is you need to show them why. Why do you need to create a network? You create a network because you're going to be better at your job, not because you're going to have a career necessarily, but because you're going to be better at your job. And if you are better at your job and you're more visible, you will also have a career. So to me, those are all things that need to be expressed openly. They're not only for women, by the way. They're both true for women and for men. But it is just making it very open and visible, the fact that there are different styles, different way of operating that can be really providing the best results if people are inclusive and trying to look at things from different perspectives. That to me is the key element of changing the culture in the company. I've seen until recently people thinking that the value of a person was how many hours he or she was at a desk. Then you know that he or she was generally he, but, you know, spending time, but not necessarily productive time. Do I really care? No, I care about the output. So if we start kind of looking at the outputs, all of a sudden you're going to have a much more balance between men and women on, you know, what is really key. And it's just the power struggles are not relevant that women will shy away from, and they will just often just kind of go away. While men tend to like it more as a, you know, power for power purposes in the game, just playing the game. It's important that we kind of move away from playing the game just for the sake of playing the game, but for an output. And if you start doing that, then you'll have more people, men and women, who are very happy and willing to provide the best of themselves. And I think that is going to be automatically giving us a more balanced and, you know, more equity and more balance between genders in our companies.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really valid point. One of my final questions, Helena, could you give me your thoughts on gender diversity in the Eurosystem, and to what extent can new ways of working post-COVID help to improve the current situation?
Yes, I think the Eurosystem is a very good example of what can happen in the near future, maybe in not necessarily only in the Eurosystem, but all over Europe and in many companies. And because, in fact, the post-COVID world is going to be a little different. It won't be coming back to what it was before, but some of the practices that we got used to during the pandemic will stay. We learned a lot. So, in terms of flexibility, and flexibility can help women, definitely. The Eurosystem and in particular the ECB is very concerned with questions of gender balance, has been concerned with that for a long time. For instance, every time the ECB opens a position directed to staff of the national central banks of Europe, the ECB explicitly encourages women to apply. Because normally there is an imbalance. There are more men applying than women for one obvious reason, because people are supposed to move to Frankfurt. And so there are fewer women applying, and they are always encouraging female applications. But there is a natural barrier that we all know. It's much easier for a man to move with his family to a different country than for a woman to move with her family, husband and children. Of course, it happens, but it's more complicated and not so common. And so these new ways of work post-COVID could really alleviate this problem. The ECB is aware of that, and it's exploring new ways of collaboration in the Eurosystem. And there are working groups discussing the matter. Maybe some news will come up in the next few months. But if there are new ways of work, that will be definitely good. For instance, the possibility to work some days per week in Frankfurt, or some days per month, and the rest of the time to be possible to stay in their country, or to the possibility to work remotely part-time, for instance, to work for somebody here in Portugal, to work in the morning for the Bank of Portugal, and in the afternoon to work in an ECB project. That type of collaboration, it's an example of what may happen even in other companies post-COVID, and that could really help bring more balance of gender in working opportunities.
Yeah, that sounds really fantastic. Well, look, we could talk about this for hours, I think, but we're running out of time. So thank you so much, Helena and Adriana, for joining me today. Really, really appreciate it, and really, really appreciate your input. And to our listeners, thank you for listening. You can subscribe to this and all other OnFit podcasts on our channel on Spotify and iTunes. Thank you again, Helena and Adriana.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the OnFit podcast.